John Hine is back on with me. When I say back on with me, I think it may be 20 years since John was last on with me when he came out with the seminal book called Jump the Shark, which was essentially about TV shows that had jumped the shark. This is the man who essentially popularized that phrase and turned it into an industry for himself. And now, a couple of decades later, he's back with book number two, which has nothing to do with TV and everything to do with fast food, from McDonald's to Burger King to Steak and Shake to In-N-Out Burger on the West Coast to all sorts of other fast food places across America. He's compiled detailed information about all of them in a new book called Fast Food Maniac. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Paul. Nice to speak with you. It's been a little while.
It has been a little while. Am I right? It's about 20 years since Jump the Shark?
A little less than that. I think that book came out about 12 years ago.
Okay.
But a lot of bad TV has happened since we last spoke. So
yes,
we got
has.
Lots of catching up to do for sure.
All right. So this is not about TV. This is all about fast food. And in reading the book, I just couldn't help but wonder if, with all the fast food places you've gone to, and we'll get into various franchises and headquarters and all of that in a moment, in all the years that you've been going to fast food places, have you compiled a collection of little prizes and toys?
I've got some toys for sure. Not a ton, but I do have different memorabilia from each place. I've sort of gotten into getting T-shirts over the past few years because the toys, you know, are more for my kids. My kids are grown up now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I have an A&W T-shirt and a Steak and Shake T-shirt and In-N-Out and you know, to kind of commemorate visiting all these places.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely have a few oldie but goodies. I've got some, and I'm not a big fan of Burger King, but I've got some glasses from the 70s that they gave out. I've got some McDonaldland stuff. So, yeah, there's definitely a corner of my house that's got some wonderful memorabilia.
Do you have any Happy Meal prizes that would cause a small child to choke?
No, and if I did, I'd have them on a very high shelf. Safety always comes first, Paul. You know that.
Well, you know what word comes to mind when you think fast food? Safety.
Absolutely, but I'm glad you enjoyed the book, and as you can probably tell, it was truly a labor of love. I've been doing literally a lifetime of research on it. And a couple of years ago, I did a TV show on one of the Discovery channels called Destination America, and I went to a bunch of different fast food places and got to see the original KFC in Corbin, Kentucky, and in Quincy, Massachusetts, the original Dunkin' Donuts, and a whole bunch of places. And I realized that even you asking me about the toys, people don't ask about or want to talk about really the food at first. It's more all the other nostalgia and memories that are associated with these places. And then, of course, you get into what's got the best burger, the best fry, the best shake. But it's more, you know, you want to talk about Americana, you got to look at the legacy of fast food. And I cover 69 restaurants in the book, which people can dig into.
When you go to one of these places, whether it's the first KFC or the first McDonald's or whatever it is, or maybe even corporate headquarters, how secretive are they?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it, especially KFC. So I go down to Corbin, Kentucky, and I'm a big Kentucky Fried Chicken fan since the days of the Colonel, not the Norm McDonald Colonel, the actual Harlan Sanders Colonel.
Yeah.
And I went to corporate headquarters, and they're like, and of course I had to ask, where's the secret recipe? You know, I've heard that it's locked up somewhere, or, you know, you can't get to it, or this and that. And they showed me the safe that the secret recipe is locked in. And only one person has that combination, and you can't get into it. And it's guarded with a bunch of people. It's in an inauspicious place. I don't want to say where it is. But it's guarded, and it's definitely treated like state secrets. Because face it, it is. People would love to have that recipe. And I will say, going to the Kentucky Fried Chicken down in Corbin, the chicken there tasted better than any other KFC I've ever been to. Now, that maybe in my head I wanted that to be the case, but it was really, really good.
Do you think that they have the original 12th spice and they're putting it in there?
I think they know the perfect balance of the herbs and spices and have been perfecting it. And also, look, they got a reputation to uphold. You're going into the original place, it better taste good, and it certainly did.
Yeah. When you go to these various places and you're talking to the people who work there, do they seem happy to be in the fast food business?
Yes and no. You go to some places where it's the last place that people want to be. They're just trying to make a buck. And then you go to other places, and a lot of different chains have cultivated this, where you get sort of a family type of atmosphere, or they just feel like they're part of something bigger and it's included and they're not taken for granted. I dedicate this book to anybody who has ever, including myself, worked in a place like this, because it's a thankless job. People really don't appreciate all the work that goes into doing it and doing it right. And you always hear about, you know, these fights people have, or the jerk on the speaker or whatever else. But those are really the exception, not the rule. Most people who work in these places are just trying to make a buck and do the best they can. But it's definitely a more enjoyable experience for the customer when the staff is happy. A good example of that is Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A, they treat their people very, very well. And they have got the best customer service in the country. Everything is answered with my pleasure, and you know, they're happy to be there. Look, we all have days at work, yourself included, where you're not in the best mood.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You got to turn it on, and some places do a better job than others. The time of day also is important too. You get different type of service at 2 a.m. versus 2 p.m.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. When I was 18 years old, I spent a summer working in a McDonald's, and it was one of those where they needed somebody to work both breakfast, which was relatively new at the time, and lunch. And so my day was like 6 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. with a 30-minute break as things were changing over from breakfast to lunch, in which, you know, I could have some pancakes or eggs or whatever I wanted, and then right back in there on the grill to make quarter pounders and all the rest of that stuff. And I can tell you that almost everybody who worked there was a teenager who just looked at it as, let's get through the day. That's all I want to do. Let's get through the day.
I totally get that. And I think with a lot of people, that is still the case. But you touch on a great fast food topic, which is, you know, McDonald's doing the all-night breakfast, because you can appreciate what went into changing over the grill at 10:30. A lot of people didn't know that. They just assume you flick a switch and everything is working. But it was a whole ordeal in order to prepare the restaurant for lunch versus preparing it for breakfast. And now I think wisely they've gotten past that and they're able to serve it 24/7.
But I would bet you that a lot of McDonald's franchisees are not happy about having to have all that inventory there all day long. You know, you're making quarter pounders, you're making double cheeseburgers, you know, you're doing all that sort of regular McDonald's kind of stuff, and somebody comes by at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, hi, I want an Egg McMuffin. Oh, got to get out the Egg McMuffin ring, got to get the eggs from the back, got to get the English muffins. It's a hassle.
Yeah, it's definitely a pain, but it did well. I mean, last quarter, McDonald's reported an uptick, which they haven't had in a while, and it seems that, you know, it's got people talking about McDonald's in a more positive way than they were beforehand. And the franchisees, they are also so important to these different brands' success. And I write about this in the book, Dairy Queen, the Blizzard was invented by a franchisee. The Big Mac was invented by a franchisee at McDonald's. The franchisees are in touch with what people really want, and sometimes they'll take something which is a limited time option and turn it into a major windfall for the franchise. So a lot of those sandwiches or specials you get at these places probably came from not somebody in corporate, but rather somebody who's working the grill or working the ice cream machine and thought about a way to do something a little bit better.
Where did you work in fast food, John?
I worked in Baskin-Robbins. That was my big deal. And the reason I worked there was because I wanted as much chocolate chip ice cream as I could possibly have. And the magic of that disappears very, very quickly.
Does it?
Once you have the keys to the kingdom, it's not as fun to ransack the kingdom, for sure. I mean, it's still the best chocolate chip ice cream that I've ever had. But it was almost too easy to get. And as a result, I worked there and I learned all about the business. And, you know, I was mopping up and closing at night and dealing with not such wonderful customers. But I definitely enjoyed, you know, when the kids came in, they were all excited about getting their ice cream cone.
Yeah.
It was definitely an experience. But like you, I was there to make enough money so I can put gas in my car and maybe take, you know, a girl out on a Saturday night.
Did you take home one of the clocks with all the 31s on it?
I wish I had one of those.
Me
I am
too.
A proud member of the birthday club, though. Every November 24th, I still get my free cone.
Nice. It's Paul Harris talking with John Hine about his book, Fast Food Maniac, here on the Big 550 KTRS. In the book, you reveal that many of these fast food places have secret menus, or at least secret items that are not on the big menu board hanging over the cashiers, right?
That's right. Almost every place has a secret menu item or a bunch of secret menu items. And I was very conflicted about this, Paul, because, you know, the first rule of Secret Menu Club is no one talks about Secret Menu Club. And I kind of broke the rule, but I felt okay doing it because In-N-Out Burger, which you mentioned in the introduction, you know, they're out west.
Yeah.
But In-N-Out Burger put their secret menu on their website. However, which to me said, okay, you can talk about this, but they only put 6 items on there, and there are plenty more secret menu options at In-N-Out. So in the book, I listed all the ones that I know and I've come across and I've heard of, and very few fast food restaurants will actually confirm that these exist, but they exist.
Now, for people who've never been to an In-N-Out Burger in Las Vegas or L.A. or somewhere else in the Southwest, they have a very simple menu. They have burgers, they have fries, they have shakes, they have sodas. That's it.
Correct. But that's if you don't know the secret menu. Whenever I go to In-N-Out Burger, and I always go whenever I travel out west, I order completely off the secret menu. I get a double meat, which is no cheese, just, you know, the burger. I get my fries well done, which makes them more brown and crispy. And I get a Neapolitan shake of chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry ice cream, which isn't even on the menu. And the best part, Paul, is the person taking the order, they don't even lift their head. They just enter it into the register, and they tell me how much it costs. And that's just a fun thing about when you're going to get fast food, that you feel like you're in this sort of special inside club, which you are in In-N-Out. And again, they're not the only place to do it. A bunch of places do it.
Do you know anything for something that Midwesterners might be familiar with, like a Steak and Shake or another chain where we could go in and order off the secret menu? What would you recommend?
Well, the thing is with secret menu items, like a lot of times you'll get in there and the person will say, I don't know what you're talking about, or I never heard of that item. And then it's your job to then educate them and say, okay, well, this is what it is and this is how you make it, because all the ingredients are on, you know, they're there. Mm-hmm. It can be done. It just needs to, you know, they need instruction on how to do it. So if you go to, I don't know, a Culver's, let's say, you can get an Ultimate Grilled Cheese, which is American and Swiss cheese with tomatoes, mayo, on sourdough. And they may think you're crazy, but once you explain it to them, they'll then know for the next person that comes in, hey, if somebody orders that, I know how to make it.
Yeah.
And it's not just limited to food. At Crystal, you can get the quad cheese, which is 4 layers of meat and cheese. At Sonic, you can get a Frito pie, which is Fritos topped with chili and nacho cheese. There's a host of different items that you can get if you know what to ask for, and that's what I put in the book.
I like the way you say it's already ingredients that they have. It's not like you're going to Steak and Shake and ordering a kale and quinoa salad.
Yeah, and by the way, as good as Steak and Shake is, and I tell the story of Steak and Shake and Gus Belt and how it came about and how he would grind the steak burgers in the window so people could see that, you know, the meat was real when it was first opened.
Yep.
And they would serve on china, and, you know, I love Steak and Shake. Whenever I'm in your town, that's definitely a place that I hit. But when you go in there, I try to make it a fun experience. I try to sort of bring that nostalgia to it. I try to have a good time with the person, whoever is, you know, taking my order, and just make it a little, you know, special, because or else it can get very mundane and very frustrating, and I understand that. But there's definitely magic in all these places. You just got to know how to find it.
I gather from the book, John, that one of your fast food heroes is Dave Thomas.
Absolutely. He's in my Hall of Fame for sure.
Why?
Few people know it. They just think he's the guy who was on the Wendy's ad. And there was so much more to him. He is responsible for creating the bucket when he worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken. So that bucket of chicken, that was a Dave Thomas creation.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to Wendy's, he didn't want to be in the advertisements, but people realized he was so down home and so smart and so really passionate about fast food that would come across when people saw him. He modernized the drive-thru. He was the first person to put a grill not just in the front of the restaurant for people who walk up to the register, but also a dedicated grill for the drive-thru. which speeds up the process. And that's why Wendy's has consistently had the fastest drive-through in the country over the past decade. That's all because of Dave. And, you know, that's certainly a man after my heart.
In the book, you talk about your favorites. You don't talk as much about the ones at the other end of the spectrum. What is either the worst or maybe in your mind the most overrated fast food item?
Great question. I think you're right. I mean, my book is a labor of love, and I definitely, you know, fast food places get enough bad press. I was happy to write a love letter because so many of us go to these places every day and enjoy them. And I'm not saying, by the way, go there 24/7. That's not a good move. But if you're going to go, you need to go know where to go and how to do it right. And so I try to provide a reference guide for people to do that no matter where they are in the country with the regionals and the nationals that I profile. But to answer your question, every fast food place has had stuff that's not worked so well. And how they deal with it is really fascinating. I mean, McDonald's, we've been talking about for a little bit, I mean, they had McPizza. They had a McDLT.
Yeah.
They had, and, you know, those sort of came and went. They also had the McRib, which people did not like when it came out. But they were smart about it. They put it away, and now the McRib comes out once a year, and whenever people hear it's coming, they don't care what the McRib is made out of. They just know that they got to get some. And making it a limited-time-only option, all of a sudden, the McRib has gotten popular again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really wise marketing move on their part.
But what have you eaten at any fast food restaurant where you took one bite and you went, well, that's it, I'm never having that again?
That would have to be a Whopper at Burger King.
Really?
I tried the Whopper. It just, maybe it was the wrong place. Maybe it was the wrong time. It just did not sit well with me, and I spit it out. I was like, you know what? I love this stuff, but I just can't have this again. That to me, and I was very young when it happened, so maybe I was scarred, but that to me stands out as something that I tried. I know a lot of people love it, but it's just not for me.
Forget waterboarding, John. You can Whopperboard him, and he'll tell you anything you want to know. The book is called Fast Food Maniac, and here's the guy who's eaten tons of fast food and written about it and shared a lot of the secrets, John Hine. Thank you so much for joining me here today, John.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Happy President's Day.
Thank you. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.